This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
This is the Turn on the Jets Podcast.
Turn on the Jets Podcast.
And now, here's your host, Joe Caparoso.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Turn on the Jets Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Caparoso, owner of TurnOnTheJets.com. For this week's episode, we're joined by Brian Bassett, longtime owner and editor of the Jets blog, now has his very own podcast on the Turn on the Jets Digital Network. We are going to talk New York Jets free agency expectations. We talked for about a half hour. We're going to dive into that interview in the next minute or so. Just a reminder to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes. It's also available on Spotify and Google Play. We'll likely be back with another mailbag episode this Saturday, and we'll stick to two episodes a week throughout March and early April as free agency is ramping up. So that's basically it. Appreciate all the feedback and all the recent episodes, especially the Sopranos one, since we went a little outside of the box with that one. And with that, we're going to jump into our interview with Brian.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
And we are now joined by this week's guest, Brian Bassett, longtime friend of the pod, founder of the Jets blog, Jets Twitter, Jets Analysis, OG, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean,
That's what Scott says. I don't know. I'm sure there were people out doing it before me. I can't believe it because two things occur to me. So number one, there was a guy who was on NJ.com and I'm forgetting his name and it makes me feel silly, but he did a blog called, it was originally called The Jet Stream on NJ.com. And he was awesome. I want to say, was it Bob Bullock? Can't remember. I think it was Bob Bullock. Anyway, and then my godfather did a newsletter like in the 80s and 90s. Like he literally sent out a newsletter, and then once email came about, he transitioned. So I was just following in the footsteps of many wonderful people before me, and now we have all these ways. I'm sure there's going to be someday, Joe, and an OG of Jets Snapchatting. Maybe there probably already is, and I'm just unaware.
Hey, it's an evolving ecosystem out there. We're still out here throwing these podcasts out, throwing out these takes, and we had to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
Free agency hits, another year of this being the biggest year of Jets free agency ever. I feel like it was just yesterday they had $100 million in cap space ready to attack free agency, and then I feel like it was just a few years since 2015 when they had that, and 2014, and 2011, and back all the way to 2008, which I think is the last time they somewhat successfully executed like a massive mm-hmm. offseason where they made a ton of big name moves. Now, there wasn't an immediate success. Obviously, they missed the playoffs with Brett Favre. That was the year they got like Fanica, Damian Woody, Calvin Pace, yep. Tony Richardson, Chris Jenkins, and a lot of that sort of laid the groundwork for success in 2009 and 2010. How you feeling at this point?
I guess what I would say is I think the big difference right in 2008 was Chad Pennington was supposed to be the starter, right? And then so we got Favre over the summer and they shipped him or cut him or whatever. So but his shoulder, as much as I love Chad Pennington, his shoulder was suspect, right? And there's just so many concerns around that and his health and all that sort of thing. So, I definitely felt worried. I felt like they had built the team up around him. And I think we're kind of in this inverse situation where I think by and large, Jets fans are pretty confident in what we've seen from Sam Darnold. Certainly, it was a small sample size. But, you look at, one of the youngest NFL starters ever to start an NFL game to then kind of figure it out despite his coaching by the end of the season. And now you kind of have the opportunity to make the team better around him. I certainly think there's hope. I'm not going to say that this team is, going to win 12 games next year, but I certainly think we're going to see better results than we did in last year, just as a function of there's going to be more to work with. There has to be more to work with. But right, I think the question is, will the front office make smart decisions, make smart signings or trades or whatever to acquire players? And I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm seeing some things that make me feel good about where they're probably going to spend their money. What about you? I know, obviously, Le'Veon Bell's the big talk. How do you feel about Le'Veon Bell? My sense is you would like him and feel like he could be a part of this team, yes?
Yeah, and I, you know, I dipped my toe in the water with the pro Le'Veon talk earlier in the year. And the more I looked at the Jets situation and how much cap space they have and the rare situation of having a quarterback on a rookie deal and having a guy who's a three-time All-Pro and at an offensive skill position where the Jets are always so barren, I think it's a rare, unique situation where they could pay Le'Veon his $15 million per year and still have the second most cap space in the NFL. And I just think the drop-off from him to the plan B of Tevin Coleman, and I like Tevin Coleman a lot. I don't want to give up. I think Nuance is, of course, dead on Twitter. I feel like I don't want people to have the impression that I don't think Tevin Coleman's a good player. I do, and I think he's better than what they have now. But Le'Veon Bell, probably going to be a Hall of Fame player if he does well on this second contract. Tevin Coleman's not that guy. I mean, Tevin Coleman, I don't think anyone's going to expect him to be a top 10 running back in the league, where I think with Bell, you're saying that he will be a very good to great running back, but also catch 50, 60, 70 passes for you, which is good on a team that has, you know, some holes at receiver and some question marks there, and be solid in pass pro. So I just don't get the sort of either-or framing where they could pay Bell and go pay Roger Saffold and pay Matt Paradis and still have money to go sign a pass rusher. There's enough flexibility to do that. And Bell is not 30 or 31. He's 27 got the year off. So, look, I want him. I think the Jets should be aggressive in going to get him. And that's all I want to see. They can't force him to sign. But they need to make an active bid for him and not put their hands up and say, we're not even going to try. And I do think there's paths to a successful offseason that don't involve them landing Le'Veon Bell. I think if you quickly pivot to your plan B, you sign Tevin Coleman. I'm very worried that they're going to give him like the Jerick McKinnon contract plus a few million, which is pretty rich for a guy who is
just face planted on an indoor team, you know, who could run on a track without Devonta Freeman, you know, basically in front of him on the depth chart. I mean, he had that. My biggest, I like Tevin Coleman. I think I liked the idea of going after Tevin Coleman going like maybe in September of the year, but having seen what he did with a, you know, injured reserve Devonta Freeman, I'm just worried that he, you know, how is a home run straight line threat guy who just had the opportunity to take on a major workload and was losing touches to Ito Smith, who is, I mean, a fine player, but not an amazing player. How does that situation play out and work to his favor in New York in a cold environment outside of a dome where he's not going to have the same running lanes he had in Atlanta? I mean, Atlanta was pretty bad for the most part, but anyway, the whole point there is just that, right? If the difference is Le'Veon Bell or Tevin Coleman, like, depending on the money, I certainly think I'm open to them going after Le'Veon Bell. I certainly, right, I don't want to get in that ugly middle contract for a guy like Tevin Coleman. Giving him Jerick McKinnon money, I think, is a mistake, to your point. I would much rather them trade for Duke Johnson. Personally, that would be the move that would make me the most happy, is trade for Duke Johnson, a guy who you can probably get for a fourth rounder or some thereabouts, who can be a satellite back, who can be a, you know, a take on a workload, and who's, you know, obviously stuck behind Nick Chubb, and, you know, and now with the Kareem Hunt signing, like, that to me is the perfect thing. And like, from a money perspective, it's roughly going to be about $5 million a year or so. That's fine. Do it. And you get him for, I guess, two more years at this point. So, but yeah, I'm with you. Like, certainly I think people have to temper their expectations. If they want Le'Veon Bell, he's not going to put up the same kind of video game numbers that he put up in Pittsburgh, because he doesn't have Ben Roethlisberger. He doesn't have Antonio Brown. He doesn't have, you know, whatever, I guess it was a rookie, Juju Smith-Schuster or Emmanuel Sanders or any of the other guys who have been through there. It's a, you know, a young quarterback, a bad offensive line that's trying to repair itself. And, you know, a kind of untested offensive, you know, kind of scheme.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Like you said, you're going to get that Pittsburgh box score, but I do think, you know, he's still a guy who can find a way to produce when everything is not perfect around him. And I think the feedback I mostly got from Coleman, from the people who follow and cover the Falcons, is like, if you get him in space and he has to run a straight line, like, he's going to make some big plays for you.
Yeah.
I just don't try to sell the narrative that we didn't want to pay Le'Veon Bell $15 or $16 million, but we're going to pay Tevin Coleman $11 or $12 million a year. It's like, come on with that.
Yeah, that to me is, that's a mistake, right? Yeah, don't do that, right? Just go the extra four or, you know, six or whatever it's going to take to get Le'Veon Bell. But right, paying, it's kind of like the, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of the worst of both worlds, right? You get the lesser talent player and you soak up a bunch of cap space for a guy who's probably, I don't know, not going to perform to his contract. So if you're going to pay a guy who's not going to perform to his contract at a position that is, you know, generally devalued in the NFL, like, you might as well pay Le'Veon Bell, or right, you go way down and you get a Duke Johnson type player. Like, that's kind of my thought. But right, I would say I don't think the answer is coming out of the draft. You know, you look at the class, you look at the way the guys tested. You know, this is a wide receiver rich class. This is not a running back rich class, as best I can tell.
Exactly, and it's hard to have faith that this regime is going to unearth some middle round or late round gem at running back who's going to make an immediate impact in year one. So I think,
yeah,
you know, pivoting to elsewhere on the offense, you look at the offensive line, and this is, I think everyone agrees, the Jets probably need to try to find two new stars and some depth on top of that. And it's not a very deep class when you look at starting caliber offensive linemen. You look at center, it's two people. It's Matt Paradis, it's Mitch Morse. Those are two guys who I think could come in and be notable upgrades over Spencer Long. It does look like John Sullivan might hit the market. He's 33. You got to figure, how much do you want to potentially get in the market for someone at that age? And then elsewhere, guard is really Roger Saffold, and then a bunch of guys who are debatably not better than James Carpenter or Brian Winters. You know, the John Miller or Roman Foster. There's no one really, like, jumping off the page. Tackle, you know, Trent Brown will probably get the richest contract, and there is some risk associated with that. Darrell Williams is a guy who was a previous All-Pro, but coming off a serious injury. You know, after that, again, like, it gets pretty thin. So the Jets are going to have to move pretty quick here. I think center is the most urgent spot, and I could see them going above and beyond to get a guy like Paradis, who's coming off a major injury. So, again, there's some risk there, too. That's part of it for free agency. They have to find some kind of answer at center because there's just a gaping hole there right now. I don't know if it's realistic, though, to expect them to land two starting offensive linemen. I mean, there's like seven starting offensive linemen with the market. So is it unrealistic to expect the Jets to land two of the seven?
Well, I mean, if they're going to do it, they're just going to have to overpay for it, right? And that means, you know, tightening your belt elsewhere. I understand that they have the second most cap space, but right, you're just going to overpay. And right, it sounds like Connor Hughes reported yesterday that Saffold is someone who the Jets have a serious interest in. I think Saffold would be a great addition to this group. Certainly, one would think if the Jets were smart, they would use basically their third overall pick and take a tackle, or maybe hopefully, my hope, fingers crossed, is that they can move back, pick up some extra picks, you know, later on, second, third round, whatever, and then use it on, you know, maybe more in the middle of where they're going to get some offensive linemen and not have to reach for a player like that. But, you know, you add someone like Saffold, you add a tackle, and right, you add a center. I think quickly your line turns around pretty quickly, but you're right. If there's, and I think you're right, just in terms of your assessment, if there's roughly seven quality starter level offensive linemen, like, you're just going to have to overpay for the position. Kind of like the Jets did with Calvin Pace going back to 2008. Like, I mean, I love Calvin Pace. He was one of my favorite players, but they kind of overpaid for him, and the value that he offered the team didn't show up in the box score all the time. You know, he set the edge, he did all, you know, some of the dirty work, he certainly got sacks here and there, but they were more timing sacks or coverage sacks or that sort of thing. But you know, he was an invaluable part of the defense for a long time. I think that's going to be kind of the same thing here. You're going to just have to overpay for somebody that you want and think, you know, you can plug in for the next five or more years, and just right, know what you're doing, and then the market will catch up to you, you know, hopefully in the next 3 years in terms of what you're paying that person.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Yeah, I definitely don't have a problem with Saffold. It kind of reminds me of the Alan Faneca mm-hmm. situation. And you could get, mm-hmm. I think you could get two, maybe three decent years from him to line up well with Darnold's rookie contract. And he helps solidify the interior of that offensive line. I don't have much expectations at the receiver position. I hate the names that they've been linked with so far. I mean, again, with their
remind me, because I'm trying to think. I'm just going back. I mean, they're out on Curse, which is great.
Thank
Cole
God.
Beasley is that who you're talking about? Cole Beasley.
I'm talking more about Danny Amendola. Moncrief. Like,
oh, look, right.
If they're going to spend a receiver, like spend, it doesn't seem like, there are some reports now that they might get in the mix for Antonio Brown. I don't know if I buy that. I think it's more like we just want to show people that we're in the mix. I don't think they're really in the mix, but I could be wrong. If you want a young, talented slot receiver, go pay Adam Humphries. Now, he's going to get overpaid, but he's 25. He's gotten better every single year. He's got good size. He's been durable. Don't pay Danny Amendola, who's 8 years older than him and has gotten worse every single year and is not going to be productive away from Tom Brady. I don't know, but again, about Cole Beasley. I also don't think he's leaving Dallas. Dante Moncrief is a spare part, you know, whatever. I don't know. Like, there's not a lot of great answers. I like Humphries. I like Jamison Crowder. I think he could be a good value guy that allows you to have more flexibility with the new one, move around the formation. The answer might be, you know, we really can't fix receiver with everything else we have to fix, so we're going to lean on a guy like Bell or Coleman catching a lot of passes, and we're going to find a second tight end in the draft who can help complement Herndon so we could use him more at receiver. But for God's sakes, like, do not go sign Danny Amendola to a 2 or 3 year contract. I'm already annoyed with the future rationalizations and justifications for such a stupid signing that would be. What are your thoughts on the receivers?
On Amendola, you know, specifically, you know, you obviously, I think it's convenient is probably the best way to say it, is Amendola is convenient because he was just on the Dolphins, right? But you know, in terms of like what he offers the team, I don't really know what 186 pound, you know, Wes Welker type player who's 33 years old, you know, coming off a season where he basically was a, you know, kind of fantasy, you know, like, I don't even know where he wound up, but like, I mean, he's a replacement level player. He's a below average slot player at this point. Like, it's just there's no value in it. And so like, I don't see why you would do something like that versus, right, I don't know, let some of the younger guys that are already on your roster have the opportunity to step up. I don't see the value someone like the Amendola adds to this team over a Quincy Enunwa or a Robbie Anderson or whoever. It, you know, Cole Beasley. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Cole Beasley's marginally better, but he's the same kind of player. And you know, Cole Beasley's talking about, you know, wherever he's going to go. He basically targets are going to be what dictates where he winds up. He's going to go to a team that's going to want to heavily target him. Well, that's fine, but I just don't know how many targets there's going to be in New York for Cole Beasley. So it seems to me like Gase is – the signals that I'm getting are he's trying to add like a locker room person, you know, a kind of captain. And it's like, if you're going to do that, like, just re-sign Jermaine Kearse. Now, I understand there's not a continuity between the coach and the player, but like, I kind of think Jermaine Kearse can offer that for roughly a lot less money. So I mean, if Cole Beasley wants $10 million a year, like, I'm out. Like, I am out. There's just no interest in that. And then you mentioned Dante Moncrief. I don't hate Dante Moncrief. I think I liked him. I mean, he seemed to play well when he was playing with Andrew Luck. But, you know, you put him in – you put him, you know, with Blake Bortles and the Jaguars, you know, on a terrible season. You know, certainly it looked bad for what Dante Moncrief did. I mean, he's not a super hyper-productive player, dominant player, but he certainly has the measurables, you know, when you kind of look at kind of his size, speed, all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not – none of these people are players that I'm willing to break the bank for. And, you know, I mean, would it be fun and interesting to see Antonio Brown come to the Jets? Of course. I just don't think that's where he wants to wind up. I think he wants to go to a place where he can stick it in the Steelers' craw by, you know, contending, right? And that's probably going to be a place like San Francisco or, you know, Indianapolis or some place where there's kind of the coach and a quarterback that are probably primed for stepping up a little bit. And, you know, and an organization that would be willing to put up with his antics. I mean, unless Antonio Brown is just doing this just to shoot his way out of town, which is entirely possible.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Looking at the defensive side of the football, Jets for the 684th year in a row, looking for a pass rusher and looking for some juice off the edge. The market is unsurprisingly thinned out with everybody getting franchise tagged because teams don't like to let their pass rushers leave. Really, it's basically Trey Flowers, Preston Smith, Dante Fowler. Now it sounds like Justin Houston will be out there. And then after that, not really, you know, kind of any notable names. The Jets have most commonly been linked to Fowler, which not overly excited about. I do think for a year or two or in a more of a proven situation, I get it. I'd rather go all in on getting Flowers or even pay Smith before Fowler, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. I want nothing to do with Ezekiel Ansah at this point. I'm trying to temper my expectations, you know, here because, again, that's an even a smaller cluster of people to debate with. I'm hoping best case scenario they find a way to get Flowers because I like how versatile he is and I think he's the top of the market. I'm concerned about a Tremaine Johnson light contract for Fowler that you can't get out of until year three, and right, he comes right out and has 6 or 7 sacks every year and is tweeting a bunch of crap and is a problem in the locker room and is getting suspended for a game here or there. I don't know. I'm wary of paying that guy. What do you think of the linebacker collection out there?
I think here's what I would say. I think I was much more worried about finding a outside linebacker, defensive end, I guess, in this scheme, than I was a couple weeks ago. And I think what's driving it is whatever's happening with Kyler Murray. So if Kyler Murray is going to be the 101 in the NFL draft, like, that changes the equation for everything, right? Because the thought 2 months ago going into this was, well, you know, Nick Bosa will go 1, Josh Allen will go 2, and then the Jets will kind of have to make do with, you know, whatever's left, Quinnen Williams or, you know, a quarterback of some kind. And then it kind of, you know, whatever, just it was very muddled. I think all the stuff with Kyler Murray seemed to be leading towards this. He's going first overall, which obviously pushes down who's available to them at that third pick. And so now you can't go to through free agency planning for who or who won't be available to you with the third pick in the NFL draft. But I would certainly feel a lot better if they left that position unsigned, focused on the offensive side of the ball, whether it's finding some offensive skill players or line players to help them out, and then get someone like Josh Allen at three. Like, that would be amazing. But I don't know. I would say that's the big thing, is Kyler Murray has kind of changed the way I felt about it. Because now you're looking at the opportunity for Allen making it to three. I do understand the fact that Josh Allen is more of a 3-4 type player, but if he's as good as people say he is, he can play with his hand down. Or they'll just scheme. You know, if coaches are actually smart and do what they should, then they should find a way to put someone like Josh Allen in a position to succeed. But, you know, that's a lot asking for NFL coaches, is to actually, you know, use the players they have in the ways that would, you know, make sense for their strengths.
Yeah, it's a high bar to clear for most of the league, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other names that there's always, like, I've talked about this a lot. There's always like a random name or two, not maybe random, that a guy that we don't talk about that much that the Jets seem to like sign in the first 3 days of free agency. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of Eric Decker talk the year they signed him. There wasn't a lot of Avery Williamson mm-hmm. talk last year when they went all in on Dont'a Hightower. That kind of came out of nowhere. Who's going to be sort of that mid-level to high-level guy that the Jets randomly are all in on and find a way to get that we're not thinking about right now?
It's a good question. At defensive end, you're saying, or just at any position?
Just anywhere. Yeah,
I think just sticking with defensive end, I guess, I would be fascinated to see what they would do with someone like, and my understanding is I think he's going to be coming free, is someone like Seattle's Deion Jordan. Like, I know he's kind of bounced around a little bit, but, you know, he obviously has that high, high draft pedigree, had a chance to revitalize. I mean, he was the third overall pick. Can you believe that? But he's had the chance to revitalize himself. I can't remember if Jordan was there in Miami when Gase was there. I can't remember when they went their ways, but when one went there or the other. 2017. So yeah, he would have been there. So they at least have some semblance of a relationship. So it would be fascinating to see someone like him, because I think he's not a guy. I don't know what he's going to get paid coming out this year, but he's someone that there is a little bit of a relationship with. He's at a position they need. He's probably not going to get a huge deal. I just don't expect him to break the bank. He signed a 1-year deal with Seattle last year for $1.9 million. So, he could be an interesting player, and he could kind of get them over, you know, for a year or something, while they kind of figure out the longer term solution to the problem. And he's 29, so, you know, he's got a year or two left. He can play at a high level.
Not crazy. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be that name or two that you're like, huh? Okay. I didn't think about that, but, you know, they have a lot of roster spots to fill. They have like two players under contract right now, which is always, always a fun situation to be in at this point. All right. Before we let you go, quick rapid fire predictions. Do the Jets sign Le'Veon Bell? Yes or no?
No.
Okay. Do the Jets sign Roger Saffold?
Yes, I think they do, because they've got the money and they've got they've got the need.
All right. And do the Jets sign Dont'a Fowler?
I hope not. I hope. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Yeah, he's one of those kind of guys, like a Tevin Coleman, where I could see him getting a big payday based on his age and his name, you know, draft pedigree, that sort of thing. But I just don't know if he'll deliver on whatever he ends up getting.
All right, Brian Bassett, appreciate you for joining us. Everyone give him a follow on Twitter at Brian_Bassett. When's the next podcast coming out?
I think we got to get one together soon. I've got a big event. I'm planning a data science event for 400 people next week. I'm on the committee. I'm not doing it all myself. But once that clears on the 14th, I would expect that we'll be doing a podcast shortly thereafter as a means of sanity for me. I'd love to kind of get in something right in the window between the combine and free agency. So if I can make it happen, I certainly will. I think it'd be a fun time to do it. So yeah, stay tuned, look for something next week or 10 days out at the most.
Love to hear that. We will be back next Thursday with some type of crazy reactionary episode to whatever starts happening in free agency. And thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back next week.